Hey everyone, you're listening to the official podcast of 4playernetwork.com. Check us out at that address for everything you need to know about our community, monthly giveaways, and nightly live streams. You can even support us on Patreon at patreon.com/4player. And last but not least, you can catch the live recordings of these podcasts every single Thursday night on our Twitch channel. We hope to see you there. Enjoy. Wait, Carlos, welcome to this episode of 4Player Plus, where we're going to spoil the shit out of Prey. Okay, there we go.
I hate that horn.
I'm sorry. My name is Nick Henderson. I'm joined today by Carlos, who you just heard with his lovely air horn, and Christopher Davis.
That's me.
Hello, Chris Davis. We are...
Hello.
This is an episode of 4Player Plus. We're going to talk about Prey. We're going to talk about some of the shit that we couldn't really mention at all during our discussions on the podcast because, you know, spoilers and stuff. We're joined by some of our... Wait, what?
We're going to pull no punches.
We're going to pull no punches. We're joined in our Patreon Discord, which is where we're recording this right now, by several of our esteemed patrons who are spectating as we record this. So thank you for joining us this evening. Ladies and gentlemen, but yeah, let's dive right in. Carlos, you were kind of saying something that sounded like a good place to kind of kick things off before I hit record. Why don't you reset that thought?
That a good way to discuss this game would be for like to pick out a specific quest, because the way quests are handled in this game is pretty interesting.
That is true.
Say, if you kill a certain character. If you kill January, like the operator you meet at the beginning that's giving you your quest, like then there's no one else for the remainder of the game to give you quests and stuff like that.
Wait a second, you can kill January in January?
Yeah. Yes.
The first time you meet him, you can kill him, and then there's no one left there to give you your
quest. So you literally just don't get any quests.
You figure stuff out on your own. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Well, no, what about October then? Or is it December?
Oh, it's December, yeah.
Okay.
But I'm assuming you can then kill December as well.
Yeah, but then the point is that by the time you meet December, he's still alive because you prevented January from killing him.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. That is a very interesting point, and I can already tell that I think we all had a pretty drastically different way or method of playing this game, or a different approach, especially to how we interacted with other NPCs. One quick question, though, before we get too far into it. I just, out of curiosity, which... did y'all play male or female Morgan?
I chose female.
On my first playthrough, and then I did male on my second playthrough.
Oh, I forgot. Carlos has actually played this game twice. That's cool. I also chose female Morgan. I've only played through it once, but I did spend about 30 hours, almost 30 hours, on that one playthrough, so... I feel like I got a pretty...
Let me tell you something. There's a certain disconnect when you're playing like a mostly unvoiced character in first person, because you obviously put yourself in the character's shoes, right? Like,
yeah.
I'm Morgan, right?
Yeah.
So whenever I would speak to Alex, and Alex would I would listen to an Alex audio log, and he would talk about me, but he would refer to me as his sister.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I guess there's another sister besides us two brothers. And then I realized, oh shit, he means me.
Yeah, he definitely means you. It's, you know, it's one thing I thought was actually pretty impressive about this game is that there are so many points where you're actually talking to a voiced character who will still refer to you by the prop by which, you know, like they recorded enough dialogue that they actually specify you and refer to you by your sex. Like a lot of games will just record one version of dialogue and then they'll
use pronouns. They'll refer to the character's name.
Exactly.
But
there are many times in this game where someone says sister or her, and you're like, oh, okay, that's cool, because that would obviously be different had I chosen male Morgan.
Yeah, like in Mass Effect, it's usually just commander.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you don't see that a lot, and I think that's one thing this game does pretty well.
Do you also realize there's a couple differences as well in Morgan's apartment?
How so? Oh, you mean like depending on which sex you chose?
If you're female, yeah, like if you're female, the toilet seat in the bathroom will be down, and if you're male, it will be up.
Wait, are you serious?
I'm serious.
That is fucking hilarious.
That's great.
There's also a couple more, but that one sticks out the most to me.
Yeah, but I think it's the most obvious.
I was going to say that, you know, that despite having the choice between male and female Morgan, it doesn't really feel like there's much of a significant difference between the two versions.
No.
I mean,
there's none. There's none at all.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like Corvo and Emily when you're playing Dishonored, too.
And I'm wondering what exactly the, beyond just wanting to make, like, let the player kind of feel more in line with their character, I wonder if there's any real reason as to why they even gave you that decision. Because in a lot of cases, like for me, for instance, I am obviously a male, but I chose to play as a female. But beyond that, there was absolutely no difference in the gameplay.
And especially when you consider how the game ends and what the implications are of that.
Oh, and Mr. Green Toast, that's a good point. You find a family picture in the beginning. It's also in your suite, your executive suite, when you go up in the top levels of... sir, what's the place called again?
The crew quarters?
No, like, what's the giant space
Talos station? Talos
1. Talos 1. When you go to the top of Talos 1 and you find your suite, there is a giant family portrait in your room, and obviously it is... It has you and your brother Alex and your parents and all stuff, and you see yourself in it. So that would obviously be different had you played as a male instead of a female, and that's pretty cool.
I also want to think that they chose the protagonist's name to be you, as kind of like a subtle
reference to you, the player.
You, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point too. There's a lot of little details, I think, that are actually pretty clever in this game. And there actually was a point, I think, in the game. Cobra mentioned that. I think there was a point in the game where someone actually said, "Hey, you," in the game. But they were referring to, "Hey, you," as in Morgan, you. But I was like. He also says another obvious difference in the apartment at the beginning was the male Morgan doesn't have a purse. Was there a purse in the apartment that maybe I missed? I mean, honestly, that was like well over 30 hours of gameplay ago. I don't remember every little detail of the apartment that I went through. But
yeah, I mean, that's at the very beginning of the game. And
I didn't stop to think that there would actually be differences in the apartment, which is kind of silly now that I think about it. But that's pretty cool.
But also, that's an artificial setting. So it doesn't actually reflect what's in her actual or his actual living quarters.
They would have tried to replicate it as closely as possible.
And there are some similarities.
No, because like when you get to your actual... Well, actually, now that I think about it, I'm trying to... When you get to your actual apartment, it is the exact same layout. The only difference being, obviously, when you're in your real apartment, you can see out the windows into space. But in the simulated apartment, they made it look like you're still on Earth in like San Francisco or something. So when you look out the window, you don't feel like you're in space. Which is because... That's part of the story of the game. It has to do with the neuromods, which is basically... This whole game is built around this science of neuromods, which is like they give you the ability... They're basically giving consumers the ability to teach themselves any set of skills or talents, if you will. But like if you just ever decide to remove a neuromod, it completely resets your memory back to the point when you first put it in. So that's why they had to kind of like mimic her apartment on Earth to make her feel like... So does that imply that... I'm trying to figure this out. Does that imply that she was on Earth before she started this experiment and they took her up to space and she didn't...
No. All the experiments have been going on Talos 1 for several weeks.
So I'm just trying to figure out why they were trying to fool her into thinking she was still on Earth. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Maybe because that's when she... I think that's when she put the first neuromod in.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, she would... If they were doing experiments about neuromods and having to remove... Because if they know when they remove a neuromod, it's going to reset your memory and you're going to be back to the moment you put it in. That kind of implies when she put her first neuromod or when they started the experiment, they started it on Earth. And then at some point... moved it up to Talos 1, I guess. I'm not sure, because every time they removed it, if they removed it and suddenly she was in space, she'd probably freak the fuck out. But I don't know. Or maybe that's just a minor detail that...
I think there's somewhere someone written that neuromod that you put when you're in your apartment it's the first neuromod you ever put on yourself.
First neuromod you put on in the apartment?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't remember actually using a neuromod in the apartment sequence.
You mean in the beginning apartment sequence?
You don't, but there's an email that says something like, oh, get ready for your first day. We're going to do the test, and I left a neuromod for you. So I'm guessing at that point she already put it on. I don't know.
I guess I had to go back and look at that, because I don't remember that at all.
And actually, it is tricky. We are getting into some tricky territory here, because when you also think about it, she had an office.
Yeah.
On the space station, on Talos 1. She had an apartment, an actual apartment, on Talos 1. So she could not have started the experiments while not on Talos 1.
No. I mean, on that timeline, she had not been to Talos 1 ever.
Wait, what?
No.
If you assume that the simulation was reality, if you assume that what her reality was, she was about to go sit foot in Talos 1 for the first time.
Yeah, she was going in for her first day of the job at the company.
Gotcha.
Yeah. But I mean, think about, you just got to remember about this game is that it's all about mind fuckery. It's trying to trick you roughly every 5 hours, and the thing is completely different about how the fucking game works.
Yeah, but I'm also trying to figure out the logistics of how they piece the story together, because they also heavily imply you spend a lot of time in your office on Talos 1. Like, you are
in the lobby.
Yeah, in the lobby of Talos 1, you have an executive office.
Sweet. Yeah.
And so it's implied that you have been involved in running the operation or running the company from inside Talos 1. I feel like we're starting to get into like time travel territory of complication, like trying to figure out the logistics of how this actually transpired.
Yeah, anything you say can quickly be like invalidated because it's a simulation.
Yeah.
We don't really understand the purpose of it or why it was done or anything, so
yeah.
I mean, we could just be wrong.
That's true. But you did make a good point earlier about all the side quests. There's a lot of cool stuff to unpack in some of those side quests too. Did anyone here have any like personal favorite side quests?
You know, there's the great thing about some of the side quests. I mean, a good majority of the side quests in this game kind of feel like just go here, do X thing, and there's not much payoff for it.
Yeah.
But there are some like Daniel's Show, like
Danielle's show that really stuck out to me. Her whole thing and the fake cook,
yeah,
was really cool. But those are kind of intrinsically tied together as well.
Dr. Galway is another one. I liked him.
Are you talking about Igwe?
Was it Igwe?
Yeah, the guy you find floating in the container.
Yeah.
Which, okay. By the way, I was talking to Robin about this, and she actually. Like, we were talking about the ending or whatever, and she was like, Doctor Who? And I was like, Dr. Igwe. She's like, who the hell's Dr. Igwe? And I was like, the guy that you saved from the floating container out in space? She's like, oh! She's like, oh, no, I just opened up the container, like, while he was floating in space, and he just flew out into space.
I came really close to doing that as well, because you figure, the game tells you, you need to open this container, and then they give you the code right away, and you're like, oh, I guess I should input the code in this container. And I was about to input it when I realized, wait, this is going to open it.
Yeah,
I didn't realize there was a recovery mechanism you had to do it inside the hangar.
Yeah, to bring it back, to dock it in first.
So I thought I would go over there, I would enter the code, and there'd be like a prompt to send it to station.
Yeah.
And no, and I had to quick load.
Oh, you actually killed him the first time and then had to reload.
No, it started like the sequence, and I was like, oh god, quick load.
You should have just stayed with your decision.
I didn't want to murder the man, no.
Oh man, this is one of those games, and I love these kinds of games where your decisions can have impacts on the way the story plays out or characters that you have that you can actually interact with later. So like, if I ever accidentally kill someone, I just leave it, because I don't know. It's kind of cool. It's like one of the few things that can actually distinguish your playthrough from anybody else's.
Yeah, I'm the exact opposite. I play very pacifist when it comes to arcane games. You know, so I really try to. If they're like possessed people, I knock them out in some way. I don't kill them.
Yeah.
If there's a way to like save anybody from being murdered by something else, I go out of my way to do it.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. I did not do this necessarily intentionally. Like I said, I was very much playing and just kind of going with whatever happened. But I got the trophy for not killing anybody on board, like any humans on board Talos One. So that was a nice surprise at the end. I could have sworn I accidentally got someone killed, but I didn't.
I think I was too,
but the trophy only applies to people that you kill yourself.
Yeah.
So the only situations in which you could actually kill a human being is those mind control humans.
Yeah.
And maybe one or two other people that you could kill by accident.
There's also the option, like there are people you could say you could choose not to save. Like Dr. Igwe, like
I don't know what it would do on that case.
Like Dr. Igwe, you could have not saved him. And you know, by the end of the game, like when you're going through that final destruct sequence, whatever, and you're getting people off the space station, so like you can actually save all of these remaining survivors and get them to meet you back at the space shuttle for whenever you leave. If you don't do that, they can just die when the fucking station explodes. So there's a lot of variation to how that game plays out, but we'll get to the ending in a bit. I know Carlos is itching to talk about that ending. I also got pretty far in this game before I realized, like, I know I probably should have picked up on cues, but I didn't realize I had a girlfriend in the game. You know who I'm talking about? Like, so like they pretty heavily suggest that you're in like a relationship with.
Oh yeah, I remember reading those emails and knowing that Morgan had someone that she had like become estranged from, but I wasn't expecting to actually run into her later on.
Yeah, I didn't even realize it until I don't even know why I didn't realize it. I think I just, because you know there was a lot of stuff to read in this game. Like Cobra in chat says he picked up on it right away. There was so much to read in this game that there were certain things, like if I wasn't like sucked in or like pulled in, like really interested in reading it in within the first like two or three lines, I didn't read it. Which I feel bad doing, but like there is so much to read in this game. So I may have missed a couple things early on, but I finally did get to a point where I read an email and realized that I was in a relationship with someone, and then that ended up being kind of a cool story that you pretty much only read about passively. You never actually address that with anyone. I mean, you actually meet your girlfriend. What was her name? Do you remember her name?
Michaela,
yeah. So you meet Michaela, and I actually met her, and then I didn't realize until after I had met her that, oh, we had a relationship.
That's the one girl the emails have been talking about.
Yeah. So, like, that was kind of a...
I lied on her evaluation so that she could come to Talos One with me.
Yeah, and that was kind of a cool moment. And that ended up... There ended up being a lot of, like, little cool details about their backstory that I ended up really enjoying. Like, for instance, the whole thing about her having a health issue that would have otherwise prevented her from coming to the station, and then Morgan covering for her to make sure she can get up there. That stuff was all pretty cool. Oh, and that reminds me, there was a side quest related to her and her father, who was brought on board the station. And
he was like some kind of whistleblower, right?
Yeah, was he a whistleblower?
Yeah, I remember not getting the quest for that. But I do remember through exploration finding the item that you need to complete the quest and having no idea what that was for.
Yeah, so...
Until I did some research on it later.
Yeah, and there were a couple things having to do with whistleblowers too. Like, I found a crate, like a random crate that I unlocked in the warehouse that had the whistleblower that was supposed to be shipped off the station.
Oh, no,
but
it's a completely different quest. So
Okay. Yeah, that's completely different. But, so I'm not entirely sure why he was killed, or maybe he was just killed... as part of the... Oh, they were actually using him as, like, to do experiments with the mimics. And I don't know if they're doing that because he did something that warranted punishment. They're like, oh, we'll just use him as a part of this experiment. But you do find that audio log where it basically reveals that you were completely aware and cognizant of him. And you made the choice to kill him by... putting him in the room with the mimic. Or was it a... What's the alien species called again?
Typhon.
The Typhon.
Typhoon.
Yeah, Typhoon. You know, like, so you put him in the room with the Typhon, and he like gets the life sucked out of him. Did y'all choose to tell Michaela the truth, or what'd y'all do?
I did not get on that quest.
Wait, Chris Davis, what are you... Oh, his mic stopped working. Okay, sorry. It's just you and me right now, Carlos.
Oh, I did not get on that quest at all.
Wait, you didn't get that quest?
I missed a whole bunch of quests.
Oh, shit. Like, but you played it twice. How did you end up missing it both times?
I don't know. Like, the first playthrough I did, I was pretty, like, exploratory. Like, I made sure not to miss a lot of things, but I still managed to miss a couple quests. The second one, I was just kind of, like, trying to get through the game as quickly as possible, but I do intend to do another playthrough where I go ahead and complete all the stuff I missed the first time.
Yeah. And so Destructor in chat says, if you never go to your office and talk to her, you don't get the quest. Which makes sense. He says specifically, if you never go to your office and talk to her, you definitely go to your office, but
you save her. Okay, yeah, but save her.
Oh, you didn't save her.
Yeah.
Well, there's several instances in the game to where the quests are completely hidden. You actually have to continuously talk to several characters in order to activate those quests.
Yeah, yeah. I noticed.
Like the security chief, like Daniel Show.
What was the security chief?
Michaela. I think it was related to the golden gun that she had in her office.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
That wasn't the security chief. That was like the captain. She had a golden gun stashed away in her safe, and she asked someone to go get it for her.
Oh,
yeah.
You know, it's funny. I don't think I ever got that quest, but I found that golden gun, and I was rocking it the entire game.
Oh, it's really good.
Because I knew it existed, and I actively went to look for it.
I mean, if it didn't have those higher stats, I probably would have gone with a regular weapon. But dude, the pistols in this game are pretty good.
That they are. I mean, I was pretty pleased. I was actually a little bummed that there, it seemed like the actual weapon variety in the game was kind of low. But like when you think about it, like
it makes sense though. Yeah, it makes sense because it's a research ship. It's not like
you're
finding all these crazy guns in there.
They took the same approach they did for Dead Space, to where, you know, that was a civilian engineering ship. So the weapons that you found were mainly just tools.
Yeah. Which is cool. So, like it allowed for a lot of creativity in how you...
You know what the game was missing, though, from its predecessors?
Huh.
Different ammo types.
Different ammo... Oh,
I know System Shock 2 had different ammo types, and BioShock as well.
Yeah.
Had different ammo types, and for a game that takes a lot of influence from them...
It was kind of surprising. It's
to see that they just ignore that.
And the crossbow too. I mean, it's not even supposed to be used as a weapon. It's more of a tool to get into rooms.
Yeah.
But it felt really underutilized.
Well, actually,
what? Underutilized, homie, no.
Well, I think I know.
I only used it like four or five different times.
I think I know where Carlos is going with this because Robin actually cued me to or tipped me off on this. But like those Typhon that kind of float around in space and like gravitate towards you and like blow up.
Oh, yeah,
they're attracted to motion. So if you fire one of those little crossbow arrow darts, the little Nerf darts, they all fly right towards it and blow themselves up.
Oh, well, see, I didn't know that.
So
and then after that, you can just pick your dart up again.
Yeah, so I was using those like all the time after she told me about that, which was like super helpful because like, fuck those things.
Since I did a human only playthrough and I had to be really careful with my points, I didn't spend a lot of points in hacking, choosing it instead to spend on like weapons and repair. And the crossbow allowed me to circumvent many situations in which I would have required a higher hacking level.
Yeah, no, like the biggest example for me would be getting into that security office on the ground level of the lobby. How you can go into that little hallway if you can kind of get the right angle. I actually had to like stand on top of like a trash can that was turned over and then like crouch to kind of get the perfect angle and then shoot through that little teller window to like hit the door to open the button from the other side and then go around, which was really cool. Like, and you can also use it to like interact with like touchscreen computers, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was really cool. I actually ended up putting a lot of points into hacking. By the end of the game, I had the highest level.
Yeah.
But there were still plenty of opportunities to do that.
You know what the best skill in the game is? And I'm going to go on a little rant here. Repair.
Yeah, yeah. I ended up using that more towards the longer I played. But
not only does it allow you to like obtain resources from fallen enemies and like fortify your turrets, but there's a couple quests in which you... like there's that one quest where you have to like reactivate the reactor.
Yeah.
Like you have to reboot the reactor, but then halfway through the reboot process, it locks up. You have to go into the reactor room.
Yeah.
Pull out like a defective, I don't know, like a cooling array or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the chick that's talking to January, tells you, oh, you need to go get a spare one that's in an elevator all the fuck way over there. But since my repair was maxed, I just fixed it on the spot and put it back.
So you just yeah. Nice. Yeah.
See, I had already found that part and I thought like, oh, that's probably plot relevant, and I just tossed it down there.
That's awesome. Dude, there were a lot of cool things like
happened like two more times with other stuff.
It's okay. Pretty amazing how different certain situations can play out depending on choices you've made, like for a while I was spending spare parts and like I didn't have the ability that was getting me spare parts from the broken operators and stuff like that. So I was for a while I was burning through those really fast, and then I ended up in that room that Carlos was talking about where you're at the very very bottom, and you're having to go into the reactor, and then after you come back out of that, you have to like get all the way back up to the top of that room, which was huge. But like there's a broken elevator over to the right. And I was missing, like, two spare parts. If I had two more pieces of spare parts, I could have fixed the elevator and just shot to the top. Yeah. But I actually had to use the glue gun.
Stairs?
I had to use the glue gun to fucking make my way all the way up that elevator shaft to the very, very fucking top. It took so long. But yeah, like,
that's what I had to do on my second Typhon-only playthrough.
Yeah.
I had to, like... quick save after every glue.
Just in case, yeah.
Placement, yeah.
Destructor wants to know if we played on PC or consoles, because that power plant area had some serious frame rate issues on consoles. I was actually playing on consoles. I was playing on the PS4 Pro, although I played this entire game before the PS4 Pro patch came out.
Which I hear does nothing.
Which apparently does nothing. I don't remember any particular...
yeah,
frame rate issues there.
Well, and I don't remember any frame rate issues up until a certain patch.
Yeah.
Because I remember I updated the game, and after that, I did start having some problems.
Yeah. And I'm assuming Chris played on PC?
Yeah, I played on PC. And y'all had problems with load times, but I certainly didn't.
I know.
Loading on my SSD, it was taking about 15 seconds to load an area for the first time.
Yeah.
And then about 5 seconds for respawns.
Yeah, it took about a minute and a half every time I had to go to a new area.
Really? I don't think mine were that bad. Mine were like 40 seconds.
And you were... okay, maybe I might be exaggerating. Maybe it felt like a minute and a half. I didn't time it. I didn't like sit there with a watch and time it. I probably should have. But like... that didn't really become that wasn't really an issue for me. I said this on the main podcast. It wasn't really a problem for me up until a certain point, because, you know, loading for a minute before going into explore an area for like 45 minutes straight without leaving didn't seem like a big issue, because that was what I was doing all the time. I spent so much time just covering every corner of that game. And then all of a sudden you get to the end and you're doing like one of those fucking like Resident Evil beat the self-destruct timer sequences, and you're having to like backtrack all over the station, and I'm running through all these load screens, and it took like literally a minute, and I had to go through like 20 of them. It was
awful. So what did y'all decide to do for that sequence? I mean, were you a January or were you an Alex?
So are we going to talk about the ending now?
I mean,
there's a couple more things I want to say.
Okay.
Like some of my favorite story moments, because I think that's where games like this really shine, like in storytelling through the environment.
Yeah.
Finding out what happened to people. Like, I don't really care about the overarching plot. I'm more interested in finding out what the people that were there were up to. You know?
Yeah.
I think my favorite one was like finding all these character sheets and
oh yeah, the D&D game
audio logs for like a D&D game.
Yeah.
And then once you get to the recreation deck, you actually find the table that they were playing their D&D game at.
Yeah, and there's also like they had been playing like the dungeon master sent out an email with like treasure maps to everybody.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And you could actually find the treasure, and it was like straight out of Red Dead Redemption. It was like a hand-drawn map with like an X, and then you could actually go find the hidden treasures around the station just by looking at the map and trying to figure out where they did this.
I only think I ever found like one of those.
I didn't do any of them.
I was short one.
I didn't do any of them just because it seemed really daunting at the time when I found that quest. But just knowing that it was in there was really cool, and it just like it seems like a total like nerd thing to do. Just a bunch of people playing D&D, and they're like, "Oh, I've hidden all this treasure for you." Like that's fucking cool. And you could find their character sheets and like read all their stats and see their like little hand drawn versions of their character, which was really cool.
It was really good. It was nice.
Nice touch. I think my favorite side quest too had to do with the cook, the one who was.
Oh, the imposter cook?
Yeah, the imposter cook, who was actually just like an escaped... What do they call them?
Volunteer.
Yeah, an escaped...
Yeah.
So they were actually like using people, like inmates, who were like agreeing to take part in these experiments to lessen their sentence. And when shit went down, like one of these inmates was like, now's my chance! And he just like took up residence in the kitchen and pretended to be the fucking cook. And then was getting you to do all the stuff for it. And then you kind of find out he was tied to Danielle Cho's girlfriend's death. So Danielle wants you to find him and kill him. Which I did. Did y'all do that?
I found him, but I didn't kill him. He killed himself.
Oh, okay. So he detonated the thing inside the...
Yeah.
So he's like sitting in an escape pod and you walk up to him. And then he detonates this thing when you get too close to him. Killing himself, but I walked in and I saw the little trap he had attached to the wall right there. So I just like he's sitting there talking to me, and I just fucking shot him with a shotgun in the face from like outside the escape pod, and I was like, that was satisfying.
You find him on the bridge, and that was the last area I went to.
Wait, what, Carlos?
Fake, because I'd been to like the real chef's room before, and I think there was a picture of
him. Chef?
Oh, the cook?
The cook, yeah.
Oh. I don't even think I found his room. So Destructor says, did you guys figure out he wasn't telling the truth before he revealed himself?
I mean, I felt something was iffy about him. It didn't click, because I'd already been to the chef's room. It didn't click in my head that that's not the guy.
So this is a situation where I feel like they were being, and I think Arcane is great at writing. I think they write their worlds really well, and there are characters that inhabit those worlds really well. But like, man, the moment I saw that guy, I was like, wow, this guy is shady as fuck. And I was like, I feel like that almost would have been more impactful if like he had seemed really like, you know, normal, and then kind of revealed himself to be an imposter.
Well, the problem there is that he's one of the first NPCs you really encounter in the game. That's not an operator.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, he was like one of the first robbers. I was beginning to think that by the time I found him, that I wasn't going to find anybody alive.
Yeah.
Or if I did find anybody, they're going to be like in sectioned off places, which I can never interact with them.
You did find all those people in the cargo bay, right?
Yeah, but I didn't go to the cargo bay until much later in the game.
Oh, okay. See, I think that's...
I didn't even go to the bridge until like in the very last... hours of the game.
Yeah, see, I feel like I could be wrong, but I feel like I found the cook after I found the cargo bay and all those people inside of it. So Destructor clarifies, so the cook's room is the place he sent you to get something out of his room. See, I didn't notice the picture that y'all are talking about, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure there was a picture there.
Which is cool. But as far as just, like, his personality, his character design goes, like, I saw him and I was like, well, this guy's up to something. I feel like they could have been more coy about that, and it may have been more impactful. But I really ended up liking that quest because I was thinking about it in the back of my mind for a really long time. Like, I didn't actually find him and kill him until pretty close to the end of the game. But by that point, I had read all the the interactions between Danielle and her girlfriend, and I talked to Danielle outside of the station and like all this stuff, and I was like, I was feeling for it, and I was like, man, fuck this guy, I'm totally gonna kill him. And like that was cool because it felt earned by the time I got
I
to
kind
it.
Of
wonder though, like, why did he have a red and gold jumpsuit?
There's another
email somewhere that says that the colors in the jumpsuit specify what department you belong to, or whatever.
Yeah.
I think red and gold is only for executives.
So, I mean, I'm presuming that he stole it from someone.
Yeah.
That just
kind of stuck out to me.
Yeah. That is another cool detail you bring up, though. Like, I never would have thought twice about the coloration of the suits, but then you find that one thing, you find that note that kind of breaks it down, and then if you memorize it, you can kind of like figure out people's backstory just by kind of like looking at them, which is kind of nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, is there anything else we want to talk about before we cover the ending?
I want to ask one thing, because this has been something that has confounded me since I played the game.
Uh-huh.
There's a room in the lobby.
Yes.
It's in a back room full of servers. It's the IT supply closet or something like that.
Yes.
If you go to a security monitor that tracks everybody, which, by the way, I think is a fucking great thing they added in this game.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty cool.
The ability that tracks everybody by their arm, anklet or something like that.
Yeah.
Their bracelet. If you go on that security monitor, you can see that inside that room, there's like 7 or 8 people. And it says they're okay. But I couldn't find a way to get in that room.
So
I was wondering if you guys knew what was exactly going on there.
No, I didn't. I didn't notice this either.
Oh my god!
I noticed the people in the room.
See, the only reason I think that was a really great feature, I didn't use it as much as I probably would have, because every time I turned on the computer and looked at that, I was like, God, there's so many names. Like, this is just too daunting. Like, if it was less people to like sort through, I might have used it more.
But also, it was a great tool for completing side quests. Like, you need to track down a guy, you search where they work and what their status is, and if it lists alive or dead, it leads you to them.
Yeah, which that was really cool.
And the twist that they have about who the phantoms really are, they're not just hyphen, they're actually converted people. I mean, it made sense for why all the fucking phantoms were actually named. And
yeah,
that's how you know what their names are.
Yeah. And that was a really cool twist, in my opinion. I thought it was like people. I thought it was like mimics that were imitating people,
nope.
Not actually people turned into phantoms.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, and whenever you create a phantom from a corpse, they keep the corpse's name.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was another. You're right. That was another cool fucking detail.
Though I didn't really ever use that because I never bought any Typhon powers.
No, I went full Typhon on my second playthrough, and they're pretty good.
Yeah.
Especially towards the end of the game, because there's one that allows you to control operators.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you just use that nonstop, and you can just stroll through the rest of the station, no problem.
Nice.
Especially the military operators.
Yeah.
Oh,
did you guys know that after Doll hacks the replicator machines or whatever, the ones that spit out medical operators, they start spitting out military operators, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's not just the medical, it's all the operators too.
Yeah. So anytime you kill one, another one's going to come out. But you can just drop a heavy item in front, and they'll stop coming out.
Nice. Well, nice.
I mean, the thing about that is that there's a... When Dahl attacks the station, there's this side quest to go rescue a guy that's in the medical bay of the lobby.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And you go in there, and you think you're actually rescuing a guy, when it's actually like a stream of military operators that start coming after you, and they keep spawning from like the two operator stations in the room.
But there actually is a guy in there. You saw that, right?
Yeah, but he's dead. It was a trap.
Yeah, he was long dead.
Oh, I thought I accidentally got him killed.
No, yeah, he had been long dead.
So too. And I reloaded a save like 5 times. Like maybe I'm not getting there fast enough. I don't know what's going on.
And if you go into this,
I caught up into like, oh, it's a trap.
Oh.
And if you go to the security room, you can look him up, and yeah, he's been dead.
Oh, well, that's cool. Oh, one last like little side thing I wanted to bring up, which I thought was really cool. At the very end, when you're kind of, I think it was the shuttle bay I was in, you find an email correspondence between this guy and this girl, and the guy is trying to get the girl to go to lunch with him because he wants to, I guess he's making some moves on her. And she's just like not having it. She's like, he's like, hey, you want to have lunch today? She's like, sorry, can't. And then he's like, oh, how about tomorrow? And she's like, no. And like just like giving him like one word answers and like totally shutting him down. Yeah. And then you find those two people in, if you did the side quest where there's the escape pod that's jammed and like it's like halfway through the escape sequence and it's like it's stuck and there's two people inside it and they need you to help them unjam it so they can shoot out of the space station. It's those two people, and it's like, and she is suddenly hanging out with him because he was like an engineer, like he working on the escape pods or whatever, and suddenly like this catastrophe happens and he's like probably the best person to know to get off the station. Suddenly she's like, oh yeah, I'll hang out with you. And they're stuck in an escape pod together, but like you can tell from reading her emails that she just like she doesn't want anything to do with him. She's basically just using him to get off the space station. It's just little things like that, which you can do that side quest and maybe never read that and then not have any idea that's what it's implying. But like just having to look and find that exchange, and suddenly it's like all this additional backstory, which is really cool. All right, but now let's talk about the ending, or the last sequence, if you will. I know, Chris Davis, you had a question a minute ago. I don't remember what it was. Something about...
I was asking if y'all went Alex or if y'all went January.
I don't know what you mean by that.
Well, which did you follow Alex's decision to save the station, or did you follow January's to blow it up?
I followed January's to blow it up, but I was also so torn that I was literally, because I knew the decision was coming, I was literally standing in the office with January and Alex, and I had like not made up my mind. And I can't remember what happened. Something happened. Someone said something, and I just remembered, Michaela said something to me, and I was like, no, like, oh, right before I did that, the last quest I did was the one about her father. And I was like, holy shit, I'm a shithead. I was like, no, I'm going to make up for that. I'm not going to do the selfish human thing and try and keep this shit contained. I'm going to fucking, that's the mistake every human makes and every science fiction thing ever, not happening. I'm destroying the station. So that's what I did.
On my first playthrough, I picked the null wave, and you know why I did it? Because it gives you like the quest markers for both options.
Uh-huh.
And the one for the null wave is right there.
So you just did it?
The station is like down at the very bottom, and I was like, fuck it, I'm done.
Nice.
No, I did the null wave. I saved Alex when the super giant typhoon attacked. I put him back in his bunker and saved him. Then I went up to the bridge and activated the null wave.
Oh, dude, do you want to, like...
No one destroyed the station?
I did on my second playthrough, but I also YouTubed a couple more endings, and I'm getting a little confused because I don't remember if this is actually the ending I got or if it's just one I saw.
See, this is why you don't do that, Carlos. You get your ending, and that's your story.
But, like...
Son of a bitch.
You know, Alex can die at a certain point, right? And so can January.
Yeah.
So like whenever I wanted to activate the Norway device, January wouldn't let me.
January wouldn't let you. But can't you just kill January?
Yeah, you have to kill January. Because you walk up to the computer where you activate the Norway device, and he starts hacking and he's like, I'm not gonna let you do that. And you have to kill him.
That's interesting. Because
yeah, but I mean if he's also like, the same thing can happen if Alex is alive and you choose to go with the destroy option. He's going to try to stop you from destroying the station.
So,
you have to kill Alex. But if both January and Alex are alive, Alex will kill January.
Yeah.
And then you'll have to kill Alex.
So, one thing that was that, you know, I think this is probably just because of the way you have to kind of do this to tell the story you want to tell. But, like, I'm used to Arcane, like, you know, Dishonored. You can literally kill anyone at any time, anyway.
Yeah.
So I kind of fully expected that from this game. But Robin said she was talking to Alex, And at one point, she was just, like, curious, so she just, like, shot him in the face mid-conversation with, like, a shotgun, and he just, like, blinked and then just kept talking like nothing happened. Which
Alex,
I thought...
I've killed Alex. Alex has, like, a huge health bar.
Oh. So she just didn't do enough damage to kill him then.
Yeah, you can kill Alex. He just has a lot of health.
Okay. See, that's...
Well, he's a big guy. Yeah. So.
I guess that's where it differs from Dishonored, because this is straight up an RPG in a lot of ways. And Dishonored didn't have... Like, you could just shoot someone in the face in Dishonored, and if you hit them in the face, they're dead, right?
I mean, if you kill the loyalists in Dishonored, you get a game over.
Yeah.
You also get a game over, and I'm sorry for going off on this tangent. You know when you catch that girl in the bathtub, you can peep on her?
Wait, in which game?
In Dishonored 1.
I don't remember that, but...
I don't remember the girl in the bathtub. Are you talking about, like, the girl as in Emily?
No, one of the Callista, like...
I was going to say that.
Yeah, you catch her in the bathtub, and you can walk in, and she's like, what are you doing? And then if you jump in the bathtub with her, you get a game over.
Okay, I don't remember that at all.
Yeah.
Okay, I was going to say.
I like arcane games. I like playing with them.
Oh, they're good. I love how you can beat this game legitimately without any, like, hacks or wall hacking or bullshit. You can do it in, like, 90 minutes.
Yeah.
All you have to do is you get into Alex's office... You find the key to the escape pod, you use the escape pod. Boom, yeah. You're at the end of the game.
Yeah.
That's not a real ending, though. That's like a fakey ending.
Yeah, it's kind of a fakey ending, but yeah, it does respawn you.
But it is still an option. Like, that's cool. Distortor in chat says, see, I didn't get that, Carlos. I had both January and Alex alive, and January shocked Alex, and I had to kill January to use the null wave.
Yeah, no, well, I was saying it works the other way. If you go to the self-destruct...
yeah. Like,
if you go to the self-destruct, Alex will kill January to convince you to not use the self-destruct.
See, that didn't happen to me. In fact, I'm trying to remember exactly how it went down, but I don't think... I think I left that room, and I think Alex and January are both still alive.
Yeah, and in my first playthrough, Alex was dead because Dahl killed him.
Oh, so Dahl's...
I couldn't make it back there in time. Like, I didn't know that was a thing that would happen.
Okay, so this is also ending...
Conversation, I just started getting like, dude, he's like breathing down my neck.
Yeah.
And I was like, whatever, dog. And then I come back and he's dead.
So Dahl is another point, like a big thing where things can differ dramatically. And that's also related to the ending. So did y'all remove Dahl's neuromod?
Yeah.
Yes.
Cool.
And that's like someone in chat earlier said, why would you remove a neuromod? And Dahl has a pretty good reason for it. Like he says the kind of stuff I do, like my kind of work is dirty.
Yeah.
But I can just put on a neuromod before on my mission. And then when I'm done, I take it out. I forget all about it. I just suddenly have all this money and I have none of the like moral guilt.
Yeah. And that's fucking cool.
That's fucking great.
And it's so good. And in the sense of the story, that was kind of a really great motivation to actually not kill Dahl and, in fact, incapacitate him instead and then drag him back because he's a pilot and you need a pilot to get off the ship. So instead of killing this guy who's trying to come after you on this assassination mission, you can knock him out, drag him into the labs and then into the surgery center and remove his neuromod, which makes him forget his mission entirely. And then you just tell him that there's been an accident on the station. We need to get off the station. Can you fly the shuttle? And he's like, fuck yeah, I can fly the shuttle. And it's just like, that's another way off the shuttle or off the station and towards the end of the game. And that's really fucking cool. I was talking to Robin about it. She shot him in the face. Didn't even know you could do that. And I was like,
yeah.
Like that's just another divergent path, which is so, so cool. But
that makes sense.
Okay, sorry, what?
Oh, go ahead.
Okay, so regarding Dahl's quest, like, he hacks the ship, takes control, and then he starts depleting the oxygen for the people in the cargo bay, right?
Yes.
So in order to stop that, you have to find Dahl's tech operator
and
disable it?
On the exterior of the station.
It's random. He can be in random places.
Oh.
Yeah, I found him in the atmosphere processing room.
Oh, see, I didn't have that. I found he had two, didn't he? Or was it one?
No, he just has one.
Okay, mine was actually on the exterior of the ship. Exterior of the station in like a little vent.
That must have been a pain.
Yeah, especially since the outside of the vent was like guarded by a bunch of like of the little whatever they call the cyst typhons. But yeah, yeah, he was totally on the outside of the ship, which was so I didn't know that was random. That's another cool thing. Oh, and so Destructor says he found him in the Neuromod division.
What I did though was like I went ahead and I went ahead to try and find the tech operator, but instead of killing him, I hacked him, and doing that brought the oxygen back to the cargo bay. Like I no longer had to do the cargo bay quest, and I'm not sure if that quest is just a time quest to put pressure on you to maybe find the tech operator quicker, and killing it or disabling it will end that timer altogether. Mm-hmm. Or if maybe once you kill a tech operator, you still have to go save the people in the cargo bay.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, that's not the only side quest in the game that has a timer associated with it. Like, there's one that, for me, ties specifically into the ending of the game that I think is super interesting.
Which one?
So, it's something you kind of have to run into when you're on the bridge. You find out that there's... Shortly after the outbreak, there was a shuttle that took off.
Oh, yes. They,
you cannot reach out to the shuttle. There's no communications from it. And you can't know whether or not it was infected with Typhon.
So you have to choose whether to destroy it or not.
And it's like 7 or 8 minutes from landing on Earth. So over that course of time, you have to figure out whether you want to destroy it remotely or not.
Did you destroy it?
I did not destroy
it. I totally destroyed it.
But the thing about it is that entire quest, there's no resolution to it. You don't know what happens. So it could be anything. But based on the way the ending is told to you, it seems, in my opinion, that the shuttle landed and it was infected with Typhon.
No, because Okay. I destroyed the Typhon shuttle, or I destroyed that shuttle, and I'm pretty sure I know what you're talking about, and the same thing happened to me. Are you referring to the way Alex tells you when you... So, I guess now is a good... This is a good jumping off point for the ending of the game. Yeah. Because you blow up the ship, or you don't blow up the ship, you escape into space, whatever. And then the credits roll. Which, by the way, I don't know why this had to be a post-credits thing. This isn't a Marvel movie. That was fucking weird.
It totally should be, because that way I can ignore that it happened.
Oh. You weirdo.
I mean, they put so much effort into designing this universe and the aesthetic designs and everything. There's no way there's not gonna be a sequel.
Well, of course.
So how do you prep for that?
Okay, you don't have to necessarily set up. You could still have a sequel without setting up the sequel in the original. That's, you know, you don't necessarily have to like be like, I mean, oh, we're gonna do a sequel. It could just be like, this one ends, and then, oh, well, look at that, another one. Anyways, the point is, the thing you're talking about, at the end of the credits, you wake up and you realize that this whole thing was a simulation, and Alex is talking to you. He tells you that this is Earth now, and he shows you an image of Earth, and it's like totally overrun by Typhon.
It's overrun by the coral.
By the coral, which implies the Typhon, which is like the Typhon's neural
network. Really?
Yeah. So it but like I destroyed that shuttle, and he still showed me that, which. I think that would have been really cool, and I'm sorry if I'm kind of taking the wind out of your sails about the ending, if that was kind of...
Well, no, the thing is, Alex implies that the entire game that you just played was a simulation based on Morgan's memories, that this character isn't Morgan.
Yeah.
And you're playing out a scenario in which they evaluate you based on your decisions.
But
so
you're also missing a huge part of that. It could
also be possible that I'm completely right.
You're also missing a huge part of that, which is that the person sitting in the chair that is hooked up to the simulation is a Typhon.
I mean, that's what I just said.
No, but you didn't mention that part. But
no, I said it's. I didn't mention that your person was, you know, a Typhon. Yeah. But yeah.
It implies that essentially they've been doing experiments to see if they can graft human emotion and logic and consciousness into a Typhon. And you have been actually a Typhon hooked up to this machine, reliving this memories, making decisions, and they've been analyzing those decisions on the outside.
And every major side character that you ran to the game is actually in real life an operator.
Yes. Oh,
I mean, they were probably alive at some point, and those operators are based on them.
Oh,
unless
shit.
The simulation was just...
Yeah, it's certainly possible.
Oh, my God. I don't know why that didn't click for me until just now. But so you wake up, and Alex is in front of you, and there's those operators there. And you can hear the people, like Dr. Igwe and Michaela, talking. And they're literally, like, restating all of the decisions you've made. In, like, a really fluid manner, too. I thought it was really cool. Like, I was like, holy shit, they're really going to, like, have this dynamic conversation and talk to me about all the decisions I just made, which was a lot. I didn't even realize how many it was until I was watching this. I didn't even realize that the people that were talking were the operators. I thought these were just the voices were coming from a room that I couldn't see. I didn't realize the operators that were floating in front of me were Michaela and Dr. Igwe and all those people.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. That's crazy. But
it's Michaela, Dr. Igwe, Daniel Cho.
Yeah.
And I think Dahl, too.
Yeah, Dahl's one of them. So let me tell you real quick before Carlos can tell me why he hates the ending. Let me tell you why I love this ending that I got. Because the whole thing is about, like, they're trying to figure out a way to stop this they tell you the Earth's been overrun by Typhon, and they're doing experiments, I presume, to try and find a way to communicate with the Typhon or stop the Typhon. But they're going about doing that by trying to graft human consciousness onto a Typhon.
And so, turn that Typhon into kind of an ambassador between the species.
Yes. So, you wake up and they're like, did it work? Is this Typhon able to react and think like a human? And then I wake up as this Typhon. I realize my brother's an asshole. I've been lied to this entire time. All these people aren't really people, and I've just been manipulated. And then it says, do you want to kill them or take their hand? And I feel like a very human response would have been to just, like, fucking lose your shit. So I killed them all.
You murderous bastard.
I murdered everybody. I fucking shoved my hand through through Alex's chest and ripped his heart out. Like, and it was purely because I was at that moment, I was sitting there like, holy fuck, these assholes, they're not people. They don't care about me. What the hell is this? And I fucking killed them. So it's kind of like their experiment was a success. I reacted the way a human might react had he felt betrayed at that level. And I took my revenge. I think that was a really cool, like, kind of poetic way to end that game. I don't think that's going to be the canon ending of the game necessarily.
I think Alex has, they built him up too much to not have him be a primary character in the next game.
Probably so. Which is kind of suck, because it's kind of turn around and bite me, like, it's kind of take the wind out of my ending a little bit, because I thought that was, like, really poetic. I was like, oh, yeah, I'm a human. You're an asshole. I'm going to kill you. So that's why I liked my ending. But Carlos, I'm going to go ahead and turn the floor over to you, because I know you have some thoughts on this ending.
Well, my main reason for disliking this ending is that I'm really, really, really not a big fan of it was all fake endings.
Yeah. No, that's...
I think they're really cheap. I think they can be done right. I don't think this is one of those situations. And it just takes a lot of value away from my playthrough, because it makes me think that everything I just did was for nothing. It was all a lie.
No, I totally sympathize with that. I do not disagree. I honestly feel like the ending could have done better. I don't know if the execution of the ending was necessarily... I don't think it was super polished. I think it was over a little too fast. I think it felt kind of rushed. Honestly, the reason I liked my ending was because of the decision I made. But I totally get what you're saying. Because the ending, especially, like, I think putting that ending thing at the end of the credits was really dangerous, because my first reaction to the actual, like, ending where you blast off into space and, like, explodes and then it just, like, cuts to credits was like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, that was kind of disappointing.
I'm fine with that. That provides you, because I see these kinds of games like System Shock and BioShock, they're more about the journey than the destination. For me, the destination, all the game like that has to do to end appropriately is provide closure. Like, kill the enemy and get out. I just want to know that I did both those things and I'm fine.
And, you know, I probably would be okay with that. I just felt like it all happened, like it was literally, the closure you're talking about literally was given to you in about 15 seconds and then credits rolled. I feel like I earned more than a 15-second cutscene. Like, there could have been something else. And, you know, I don't even think it had to be something different. It just needed, I think it deserved a more fleshed out, polished ending, even if it was doing or executing the same thing. But I think it was dangerous doing that after credit scene because my first reaction to that, like, extremely brief ending was, oh my god, what the hell? And I almost turned the game off. I almost did that. And Robin was like, no, wait. And I was like, oh, shit. I'm glad somebody told me because that would have really sucked had I not seen that last ending. I mean,
like, I had this idea for the ending and I'm going to fly it by you. Like, I liked the thing they did at the end where they kind of give you a breakdown of the choices you made and what they think about them and stuff.
Yeah.
And the way I could have seen the game ending a lot better is if, like, say there's only one way to end the game, which is with you blowing up the station. And, you know, once you set the bomb to detonate, the timer starts counting down, and you can either escape or you can, like, sit down at a chair and just wait for it to explode.
Yeah.
I was thinking, like, maybe if you choose to sit down at a chair and wait, while you're waiting, like, the people leaving on the shuttle, they get to you over the radio, and they, like, why didn't you leave with us? And then maybe they start telling you what they think of you.
Yeah, no, that would have been cool. It would have kind of removed the choice. They would have had to give you a definitive, like, Morgan stayed behind and chose to sacrifice him or herself, which would have, you know, I know the thing is, they gave you so many choices up until that point. I don't know if it necessarily need to make the ending a choice. I would have kind of, like, this is also one of the situations where it's going to kind of split the audience. Everyone's going to have made it. Certain people will have made a decision that will not be considered canon in the inevitable sequel. And that's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, but I mean, if you think about it, I mean, they could go, if they wanted, they could go wherever they want with this. They could go with the evil ending where you fucking murder everybody.
And then if you did that, you would just not get any voiceover at the end because there's no one left to tell it to you.
Yeah, and that would have been cool. I
would have been punishment enough for you choosing to play like you did.
I personally hope that this ending doesn't really have anything to do with the U's. Because that way they can kind of avoid telling you that your choice at the end didn't matter. This is what actually happened. Like,
well, I mean, there's plenty of room for ambiguity if you wanted to go there.
But there's plenty of room that what is important at the end of the day is, I don't think, is necessarily like Morgan and Alex Yu, I don't think are necessarily that important. Like, what they've set up is a universe where Earth has been overrun by a alien species. And that's the important thing. Anyone can be involved in that story going forward. I don't think it necessarily... We don't have to see... Like, this isn't Halo. This is not... Morgan Yu is not Master Chief. This is not a situation where I have to see Morgan Yu come back.
Yeah.
But it's not Morgan Yu, though. It's like the human Typhon hybrid or whatever.
Yeah.
Because you could... After finding this out, you can no longer be Morgan Yu, because you know that you're not Morgan Yu. You know that you're a fake.
Yeah. That's true. But, like, they can choose not to continue telling that story. That could have just been a one-off thing, and the ending is now... The only thing that you really need to take from the ending is the idea that Earth has been overrun by the Typhon. What is Earth like now? What stories are there to tell there? I think maybe... I like this idea of them trying to create an ambassador between humans and Typhon. And maybe the next game has to do with a humans trying to get their hands on that ambassador and hopefully use it to, like, bring peace or something. I don't know. But, like, I don't think you necessarily need to play the next game as that Typhon or as Alex or Morgan Yu.
They could go choose a completely different character. They could go with any of the characters that were on the station if they wanted.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I...
Because all they imply with the game, I mean, you look at Alex's character model, it hasn't aged a day in comparison to the rest of... comparison to what's in the simulation.
Yeah.
So it theoretically could have happened 20 years ago. It could have happened don't know, not too long ago, maybe a year.
Yeah.
You could go anywhere with how they wrote this ending.
And I know. And that's exciting. I definitely would like to see another game. I'm kind of nervous. It left me a little bit nervous about what they're going to choose to do with it. But, like, I have faith in Arcane. I think for the most part, with the exception of a few rough spots, rough patches maybe, and I know the ending might be divisive, as you can even see between the three of us, I think the universe they made and the systems they put in this game, I have no doubt in my mind I want to see another Prey.
Oh, yeah.
If they call it Prey 2, I'm going to shoot myself.
Hell on Earth.
They're going to have to.
And then we're going to go through this Prey, like, which Prey 2 is it? Like, because this is already,
we're already dealing with that bullshit. Fuck that.
No, but, like, it's going to be even worse. Because, like, this is called Prey. There was already a game called Prey. Or is this Prey 2? But now there's going to be two Preys and two Prey 2s.
I still hate finding YouTube videos of people trying to, like, connect Prey with this Prey.
Oh, yeah.
Like, why? Why are you doing that? Like, don't. Stop.
I mean, not to mention they've said it themselves, like, there is no connection at all.
Yeah, and if you look at their early design documents, which they published, they show zero connection at all.
Yeah.
In fact, the original design for the game, one of the first proposed ideas, was a kind of System Shock 3. And the main character, interesting enough, Danielle Cho.
Oh. No, I saw those design docs you're talking about, though, which was kind of cool to see. But, yeah, I mean, I like this a lot as, like, a standalone experience, but there's going to be a sequel. I'm just, what are they going to call it? What are they going to do with the story? I have no idea. It's kind of exciting, but it's cool because this is another really, really, really solid Bethesda property to work with. They've turned it into we'll kind of see how the sales dictate its success, I guess.
It's going to be several years before we get that, because now that both Arcane teams are done with their respective projects, they need to pause for a while and start thinking about the future.
Well, I mean, we'll see what happens. In fact, we might have some answers that we've been looking for as far as what Arcane is up to, maybe as early as next week. I have no idea.
Oh, God.
Dude.
No,
think about it.
Please, no.
I know you say that, but think about it. We're going to be, E3 is next week, Bethesda's conference is in less than a week, and we only know of one game that they're working on with 100% certainty. One game.
What's that game?
Quake. That is the only confirmed game they have in the roster, and they're doing an entire showcase.
Well, we know they're doing a Wolfenstein.
Wolfenstein, Evil Within.
We know we had to hear about Tingo Game Works.
That's the hope. All right. We're going to talk about E3 later. It was not necessarily the E3 pocket. I just wanted to point it out. Like, Arcane is a big studio for Bethesda, and they've been done with Dishonored 2 for a while. There might be a teaser for whatever they're working on. You never know. It's just the nature of this industry. They're going to start teasing whatever the fuck, even if it's like two or three years out.
God help us.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. Anyways, I think that's kind of a good place to stop, unless there's anything else y'all want to throw in before we cut the...
Talking about it makes me want to replay it.
Good. Go replay it.
Did you know that if you read all the emails in the game, you get an achievement called Press Stink Fuck?
Press Stink Fuck?
Sneak. Press Sneak.
I was like, what is a Stink Fuck?
Remember the Rafael Contanero email that leaked from years ago about, you know, now that people have figured out that we're working on Prey, those Press Sneak Fucks are going to leak it out to people.
That's funny.
And that's an achievement in the game.
Nice. It's a good find.
Pretty good game.
Yep, GG. Pretty rad game. I hope
it does
well.
Is it better than Resident Evil 7, Nick?
I know the answer to that question, but I'm not going to answer that question for you, you troll.
But this is a spoiler cast.
You filthy troll.
It's better than Alan Wake.
I know where it ranks so far for me in the year, but I'm not telling you. Anyways, thank you guys for listening. If you're listening at home, thank you for listening, first of all. If you have not played Prey, then you shouldn't have just listened to this, but... you should still go play it. It's fantastic. If you'd like to support us on Patreon, it's patreon.com/4player. If you support us at $5 a month, you can chime in and listen to these recordings live when we do them, and you'll even get them 48 hours early before everybody else. So, thank you to everyone who joined us this evening to spectate and chime in. We appreciate your interaction and whatnot throughout the recording. And yeah, 4playernetwork.com is the website, of course. Chris, thank you for being here. Carlos, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And